The Marriage Mentor, Becoming the Couple You Long to Be. This is the book we talked about yesterday with Rhonda Stompfy, the co-author with her husband Steve. I'm Adam McManus in for Kevin Swanson on this edition of Generations. She's the founder of No Regrets Woman, a ministry dedicated to helping women live life with no regrets in a way that honors God and His design for them. Rhonda ministers alongside her husband, Steve, who pastors First Baptist Church in Patterson, California. They have 4 grown children and 13 grandchildren. I want to encourage you to check out her website, noregretswoman.com. That's noregretswoman.com. Well, we don't want to waste a moment because there's so much to get to, as promised from yesterday. Let's jump right into chapter 6, which is entitled, Telling Her She's Pretty and Keeping His Attention. In that chapter, Rhonda, you tell the story of George Mueller's marriage to Mary. In order to support his orphan ministry in England, what did he ask her to do with her fancy silver and china, and what lesson should we glean?
I love the story of George Mueller for so many reasons. One, I love that he was a scoundrel before he came to Christ. I love that if you read his biography, which I highly recommend reading biographies of amazing godly people who have gone before us, when he finally came to Christ, he was at a Bible study, and he met a woman named Ermengarde at the Bible study. She was beautiful, pretty hair, fancy. She giggled, all those things. One day, he said, I want to be a missionary. And she said, oh, I could never be a missionary. Missionaries are poor. And I want you to be a lawyer or a doctor. Leave being a missionary for other people that don't have anything better to do. Mm. And, you know, the poor, right? But she was gorgeous and he was in love with her. He was devastated. So he broke off that relationship and he was determined that he was just going to be a single man serving the Lord and not have a wife, because he figured that most women thought the way that Ermengarde thought. And then he met Mary. Mary was older than he was. In his biography, it says she had the largest nose of anyone he'd ever met, man or woman, and her beauty was not in her outward appearance, but he fell in love with her. He said the feelings surprised him because she was 8 years older than him. And when they got married, she became the best helper for him. When she had all of her dowry, her silver, her belongings, and she decorated their tiny home with all of those fancy things, then he said, you know what? We need to sell all of this. We need to sell it all so we can use it for ministry. Mary responded, do what you think is best, and may God help both of us. You know, I have to tell this story. When Steve and I were living in the Bay Area in San Francisco, so expensive, back in the early 80s, and we were flipping houses. We were living in them while we flipped them because it was so expensive to pay rent somewhere else. Every time we'd finish a house, Steve would find another one, and we'd move into, you know, I'd say, just get one room professionally cleaned, and I'll move in, and we'll do it. People thought we were crazy back then. Now we would have a show. I'm certain of it. But back then, we just did the thing. But my husband's heart was always to be debt-free and to live in the country. I loved him, so I loved his dream. But I was born in Los Angeles. I was a city girl, and I was just like, okay, baby. One day, he said, it's time. The housing values have gone way up in the Bay Area. It's time. He started looking, and he found this ranch in the middle of nowhere, USA, on a mountain, 45 minutes from the nearest town. It was a little house covered with snow the day that we went up to look at it. And it was a charming little cottage. And he said, this is it. So I said, okay, I saw my husband's dream in his eyes, and I knew I was holding Steve's dream in the palm of my hand.
And there was no Costco anywhere around.
Oh, heavens, there was no Walmart. There was no store. It was a winding mountain canyon road, but I knew this was his dream. I really had to fight my fear and say, okay, let's do it. Our house sold immediately. We moved into this little house. The day that we came up, the snow had melted. It wasn't a cute little cottage covered with frosting. It was a shack. It was horrible. And we moved into this little place. Like I was saying in an earlier show that we did together, it had one bedroom. So Steve and I slept on the sofa bed. No power. We had a generator. I figure you call the power company, they plug you in. 2.5 years of no power.
Ooh.
I bought a butane curling iron in the 80s. I'm sure that saved our marriage.
Wow.
It was crazy. And I was, lots of tears. during that season, it was a hard season for us. Steve would work all day. He would go to town and come home at 7 o'clock at night, work on our house. And I was home living his dream in the country while he was in an office in town. Boy, it was a really hard, refining season for our marriage. Yet, as the years went by and he added on to our house and life kind of started to make sense, a decade later, a little church down the backside of this mountain was a town called Patterson that we didn't even know existed when we bought our place. A little church in Patterson asked Steve to be their pastor. Steve had gone to Bible college. His heart was to be a pastor. He always worked bivocational in youth ministry. 10 years later, this little church with a little budget asked Steve to come and be their pastor because we had no mortgage payment. We lived in California, and because we lived in a house that he had bought 10 years earlier and built the house added on as we had the money, so we never took out a mortgage, he was able to take that position at that little church. He's been at that church 22 years, and that church has grown. I don't know why I'm getting all emotional about it. The people that have come to Christ, the people that that man has discipled and has ministered to, because I followed his dream a decade before, I was scared to death, and I thought he was crazy, but I also knew this man follows Christ, and I can follow him as he follows Christ.
Well, and I would say you're getting emotional because you love him and respect him.
Absolutely. Yes, for sure.
What lessons can Christian wives glean, Rhonda, from the biblical character of Ruth, as well as the Proverbs 31 woman? I know we could do a whole show just on that one question, but what would you glean?
Well, the Proverbs 31 woman, I kind of think it's like women go, yeah, her, she's awesome. But that's not just how she lived that one day. That's her life. It's all of the things that she accomplished over the years of her life. For Ruth, man, I love Ruth's story. She was an amazing woman that followed her mother-in-law, but she followed the God of her mother-in-law. My mother-in-law, my husband's mother, was an amazing woman who loved Christ. And I remember wanting to love my family the way I saw Eleanor love her family. So I get tenderhearted when I think of Ruth following her mother-in-law. Some of the things that we can look at real quickly is that she delighted in her work. She didn't shrink back when there was hard work to do. She just went to work and gleaned the fields. She was dependent upon God. I love knowing that God saw. God is the God who sees. And as she depended on God, his providence orchestrated her provision. He brought her to Boaz's field, and then he brought Boaz not only to watch out for her, but to become her kinsman redeemer. I love that. And the Proverbs 31 woman, dedicated to godly speech, says, she opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. What is in our hearts is what spills out of us. So as a man speaks is what's revealing our hearts. When we get bumped, iron sharpens iron. When we live in community with others, our spouse, our children, when we get bumped, what spills out of us is really what's going on in our heart. And so we can look to blame others for making me so mad that I said those things. But oftentimes it's because it's been going on in our heart. And when we finally get mad enough, we say the hurtful words. So learning to take those thoughts captive, asking God to show me when something does spill out, what does God want to change in me? Determine never to make your husband feel inadequate or stupid in front of others or in private. I cannot speak enough about the need for your husband to feel that you honor him. Steve and I were doing a marriage class at church, and something that he brought up that I had completely forgotten about. Early in our marriage, he was going to make some quick money by investing in some oil something. And it was $8,000 that he invested in this, whatever it was. He had come to me and told me about it, and I said, whatever you think, and he lost that money. It never came back. Right.
Oh.
And we were young. We regretted it, but it was over. And he said something 20 years later at a class we were teaching. He told that story, which I had forgotten, and he said, do you know my wife never, ever brought that up again? I never, ever felt like a loser because I had made that bad investment. And honestly, I had forgotten about it, but it meant so much to him that I didn't keep bringing up, well, we could buy a car if you hadn't lost that money. You know, here I'm talking about it on the radio now.
Oh, the irony.
Yeah, right.
Well, on another topic, why is it so important, Rhonda, for you to hear from Steve that he finds you attractive? And why do you think, like a lot of husbands, he needs some patient nudges from you to compliment your looks?
We want to feel that our husbands think we're attractive. And Steve's like, well, baby, I told you you were pretty when I married you. If you change this, I'll let you know. I'm like, LOL, that's funny, but that's not what I need. And I remember when I went through menopause, I started putting on a little bit of weight. I started not feeling like, you know, the homecoming queen that he had married. And I was like, babe, I feel frumpy and I need to hear from you that you still think I'm pretty. And he goes, babe, I think you're pretty. And I said, I appreciate that. But when I make an effort, I need you to tell me. And he's like, okay. And then he doesn't. He forgets. And, you know, that's just compartmentalized brain, whatever. So I can either say, hey, I asked and you didn't. So now I'm going to be resentful. Or I can say, hey, how do I look? Do you like my hair? We coach them. We help them live with us in an understanding way. A story I just thought of when I was a young mom, brand new kid, first child. And I remember, you know, Sundays were the day to get dressed up and go to church because the rest of the days I was staying at home and with a child instead of going to work. And I remember there was a man at church that would tell me I looked pretty. Mm. And then I was like, oh, thank you. And the next Sunday he said, I look pretty. And I said, well, thank you. And the third Sunday I was getting ready for church and I was thinking, I wonder if so-and-so is going to tell me I look pretty today.
Oh,
right?
My.
And I went, whoa. Yeah. And I went out and I found Steve and I said, babe, I have to tell you something. We have to be vulnerable with mm-hmm. our spouse, with our yes. weakness, with our frailty. And I said, this is what's been happening. And this was the thought that I just had. And he said, so are you telling me you're attracted to that man? And I said, absolutely not.
I want you to say you're attracted to me.
Bucko. Yes, I'm telling you.
Before
it
I get
meant
too
so
interested
much.
In what that guy has to say.
Yeah, but I needed to tell him right away. Because it was like, oh, I don't want to have to find it from out there. I want to find it from you.
Right.
So it's being honest and being vulnerable with each other and saying, hey, I have this need and I need to hear this from you.
In chapter 7 of your book, The Marriage Mentor, it's entitled, All He Wants Is Sex When She Longs for Romance. You explain what sex means to the husband. I love this chapter as a man. It was encouraging to see a woman get it. There's a lot more here in chapter 7 than just for the man that sex is about physical satisfaction. And that's a key lesson that women really need to grasp, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Here's a quote that I think is enlightening. When you mistakenly view your husband's need for sex as some sort of primal urge to be satisfied from time to time, you are missing the true ministry God has given you to affirm your husband's deepest emotional needs through sex.
Mm.
Husbands struggle with feelings of inadequacy and loneliness. And what wives don't understand is when we pursue our spouse in the marriage bed, it speaks to them, I value you. It pours courage into them. Husbands will say, what happens in the bedroom really does affect me the next day when I'm out at work.
Mm-hmm.
We think it's a primal urge that they need to have satisfied. What we need to realize is God gave them the need, the vulnerability to be satisfied in the marriage bed by their wife because it does fill a need. And just as much as we long for our spouse to be romantic with words, to talk to us, to interact with us, how are you doing? I remember when Steve would come home from work and it's like he's spoken his 5,000 words before he even walks in the door. And if he were to walk in the door every day and say, you know what, I've already used my words. Stop talking to me. I can't listen to you right now. I just need to go veg in front of the TV. I don't want to listen to you.
Ooh.
I would feel betrayed.
Mm-hmm.
I would feel rejected and alone. I would look to somewhere else to be able to find that emotional need getting filled by conversations, by being heard. In the same way that God made us, most women, there's always that woman that says, oh, I'm not like that. I say, okay, that's great. Awesome for you. But the way that God made most of us women to connect with our spouse through conversation, through being understood, through being heard, through being romanced by words, God made our spouse to connect with us in the marriage bed. When we refuse to take our spouse to bed for 2 weeks because we're overly stimulated, the baby's been nursing on my body, I've been touched, I'm tired, I just can't even think about going to bed right now with you. What we are saying is you're not important to me. I don't value you. When a wife takes her husband to bed, pursues him sexually, that, you know, Steve, there's a quote in The Marriage Mentor. Steve says, In my years as a biblical marriage counselor and a pastor, men whose wives pursue them sexually are deeply in love with their wives. Mm. And that is a secret to a marriage that is intimate and growing. If you go to my website, noregretswoman.com, you can sign up for my newsletter and you'll get the free audiobook, A Christian Woman's Guide to Great Sex in Marriage. The ebook is also available on Amazon, but you can get the audiobook read in my voice for free because I meet Christian women all the time that say, I'm just not that into it. It's just not my thing. This book will walk you through how God prepares women's bodies to enjoy the marriage bed. There's a quote in The Marriage Mentor that talks about a man who says, not having the intimacy in the marriage bed that I expected is like a treasure lost. Oh. I feel betrayed. I feel alone. I grow angry and resentful. But there's no understanding on a woman's part what it does for her husband to pour courage into him and to cause him to be in love with her if she pursues him. Not just, hey, it's Tuesday, let's do that thing we do, but pursues him, throws him a flirtatious text while he's at work. And then teaching him, okay, I want to take you to bed, but I'm tired. And these kids are driving me crazy. Let me go take a shower. You know, I've had my mama hat on all day long. I got to switch gears. I got to go find my sexy mama hat. It's somewhere under the bed with all the dust bunnies. If you make all this crazy go away, put them to bed. I don't care if you give them cereal for dinner. Just let me have a few minutes and switch gears, and I'll meet you in the bedroom.
Now, I'm dating myself, but the line from television, the television ad is, Calgon, take me away. The old soap bubbles, right?
Exactly. Absolutely. I need you to be my knight in shining armor and rescue me from this crazy, and then meet me in the bedroom and I'll make it worth your while.
Mm. One line that you wrote in chapter 7, all he wants is sex when she longs for romance, it was very intriguing to me. You write, the primary reason women withhold sex from their husbands is selfishness, plain and simple. Not having sex with your husband is a sin. Fascinating. All right, let's move on. We've got very little
time. And you're
going
to get a ton of emails about that. There's going to be people so mad about that line.
Adam at theworldview.com. I welcome them. You cite a survey in which 74% of men said they would not be satisfied sexually if their wives offered all the sex they wanted, but did so reluctantly or simply to accommodate their need. I think you touched on this, but that's mind-blowing, I think, for the women listening, the wives, don't you think?
This is the most important thing. He just wants you to want him.
Mm.
He wants you to want him like you did in the early days. He wants to know, my woman wants me. You know, men are standing around the water cooler at work complaining about their wives. Let him be the one who's got this secret in his head going, oh, no. My wife wants me. I have someone at home that pursues me. And we just went to a pastor's wives retreat and was doing a one-on-one with a woman, and she was saying, I'm just so tired. I get it. Raising kids, working, all the things. We are tired at certain seasons of our life, but it is a season. But if you make it a point to pursue your husband, even when you're tired, just like you expect him to talk to you, even when he's tired, you will build a foundation of a lifelong marriage where you are in love with each other.
You note that a 2004 survey revealed that 84% of men said they do want to be romantic, but most say they just don't know what romance looks like to their wives. They have ideas, but they don't know what it looks like to their wives. What advice would you give the men listening?
First, I would say to the ladies, let your guy off the hook. They're deer in the headlights. And men, ask your wife, what would feel romantic to you? And I know that's being vulnerable, but honestly, being vulnerable is what creates the intimacy in your marriage.
And the romance.
And the romance. Babe, I want to do what speaks romance to you, but can you give me some clues? Can you give me some hints? And then I guess I should back up and say, in the book, each chapter, I write to the wives, yada, 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 lots of words. In gray boxes in the same chapter, Steve writes, men, here's the cliff notes of what your wife just read from my wife, and he tells them the high points. So if you're not a reader, you can read just the gray boxes, husbands, and you're going to get what your wife's getting. You can also watch videos that Steve and I created for free If you go to noregretswoman.com, you'll find the link to that. But if we are going to grow in our marriage, we have to be willing to talk to each other and to say what speaks romance and then let each other off the hook. Here's one. Steve and I, our 25th wedding anniversary. Babe, what I want from you for our anniversary is a letter. I want you to write me a love letter. I want you to tell me everything you love about me in our marriage of 25 years. And he's like, okay. And as time kind of drew closer to our anniversary, I'm like, you write your letter? Not yet. Did you write your letter? Not yet. Right before our anniversary, I said, babe, did you write your letter? He goes, Rhonda, I will give you $1,000 if you don't make me write that letter. I'm like, okay, give me the money. And he did. But you know what? I know my man, and I know that it's out of his comfort zone to do that. I mean, when we climb in bed at night and I'll go, babe, I am so in love with you. And he'll say, I love you too. And I'll say, thanks for marrying me. And in his most romantic, poetic way, he'll say, thanks for showing up. That's poetry. I know that man, and I love him for it.
We're talking with Rhonda Stoffi. She's the author of The Marriage Mentor, Becoming the Couple You Long to Be, along with her husband, Steve. I'm Adam McManus in for Kevin Swanson here on Generations. We'll be right back.
Hey, dads, time is running out. Your baby boy isn't a baby anymore, and soon he will be gone. Don't miss the opportunities to spend quality time with your boy while you have it. Come to the Colorado Father-Son Retreat this August 25th to the 28th. You'll enjoy an adventure, make lasting memories, enjoy real fellowship, and eat great food. Best of all, you will be encouraged in God's calling for men as you take time for intentional conversations to point your son to Jesus Christ. Get ready to be physically and spiritually refreshed at this intentional, fun-filled retreat. Go to ColoradoFatherSon.com to register for this August 25th to the 28th. Dads and sons of all ages are invited to join us at Horn Creek, Colorado. Spend 4 days and three nights of dedicated time with your son. 4 days of fellowship with other men and boys from around the country, all while learning from godly men about living for Christ in today's culture. Go to ColoradoFatherSon.com and register today before time runs out.
Welcome into the second half of our conversation with Rhonda Stoffi, the co-author with her husband Steve of The Marriage Mentor, Becoming the Couple You Long to Be. And what's your website, Rhonda, if people want to check that out?
NoRegretsWoman.com.
NoRegretsWoman.com. I'm Adam McManus for Kevin Swanson. We welcome your feedback, by the way. If you'd like to email me about this particular conversation, send that to Adam@TheWorldView.com. Tell us about the day you became a biker chick.
So we had moved to the middle of nowhere. There's one biker bar that was near our house. Like, it's about 5 or 10 minutes away. Steve and I were on our, you know, decided we were going to ride motorcycles, and we would go on our motorcycle rides for miles. We've actually taken the motorcycle from California to Seattle and then caught a cruise ship to Alaska. But I knew that when you're young and dating, you play together. You do fun things together, and that kind of grows the marriage and the fun in your relationship. Steve always wanted to ride motorcycles with me on the back. And I wouldn't do it when my kids were little. I'm like, if we die, who's going to raise these kids? But once Meredith turned 18, he's like, okay, Meredith's 18. If something happens to us, she can raise everybody. Let's get a bike. And I had to force myself to do it. But once I did, I realized how much it meant to him and how much I enjoyed just being with him. And on the back of a bike for thousands of miles, you're quiet. We had helmets with headphones, and we ended up not using those. We just wanted the quiet. Obviously, I'm a talker. So having me sitting behind him with my arms around his waist and being quiet and just tapping his shoulder and pointing at things that we were looking at along the way, that became such a romantic getaway for us.
Chapter 8, entitled Every Couple Fights. In that chapter, you share 8 steps to making peace. What are those 8 steps?
The first is admit you have a problem. Stop saying, I'm fine, everything's fine. When it's not fine, think about it, put into words, and talk about it. Number 2, acknowledge your sinful bent. We are all fallen creatures, and we are all susceptible to sin. So instead of blaming someone else, look at your own contribution to the conflict. Number three, refuse to be argumentative. I love the scripture that talks about the man of God is not argumentative.
Rhonda, that's a great verse indeed. It's found in 2 Timothy 2:24. The man of God must not be argumentative, but must be kind to everyone, able to teach, not resentful.
Let it begin with you. Refusing to poke at your spouse, to look for things to argue about, conversations that resolve conflict, but not being quarrelsome. Paul says the Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but kind to everyone. Number four is make peace a priority. Whether you and your husband fight over finances, how to spend your free time, or how to discipline your children, it's time to stop. No argument is worth winning when the love and unity of your marriage is at stake. Number five is pray without ceasing. You know, the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous one accomplishes much. Pray for unity. Number six, forgive your husband as many times as necessary. Don't keep a list of his infractions and throw them in his face. Cover it with love and forgive. Number seven, seek godly counselors. If you can't resolve conflict, it's time to get outside help. Number eight, learn to be a peacemaker. You can trust that God will bless you when you determine to be a wife or a husband who makes peace with their spouse.
What are the three steps to biblical conflict resolution in marriage?
Ask God to help you bring glory to Him by how you respond to conflict. When two imperfect people live together, there is going to be conflict. A good marriage is defined by how you respond when you have a disagreement. Take responsibility for your own contribution to conflict. When you have a disagreement with your spouse, blaming them for the problem is our natural default. When you take responsibility for your contribution to the conflict, then you're on the path to resolving it. And then don't bring up your husband's past failures. Don't say, you always, you never. Look at the issue for what you're talking about.
In chapter 9, entitled, Our Marriage Would Be Better If Bad Things Would Stop Happening, you share the story of a terrible motorcycle accident that Steve was in. What happened and how did God use it to help draw you two closer?
It was awful. He shattered his hip. He went over the handlebars of a dirt bike, and he had to be life flighted and was in traction for 10 days. He had to have like a metal plate in his hip. I say he has buns of steel now because he's kind of got the metal plate in there. But during that time, he was in traction. I went and stayed at the hospital with him. My two youngest kids were still living at home. They were 16 and 18 years old. They would come and go from our house to the hospital, which was about an hour and a half drive. We live in the mountains, and we heat our house downstairs with a wood stove. The kids didn't keep the wood stove burning because they live upstairs where there's heat. And so what happened was the pipes froze and the water pipes burst into the house. So while Steve's in traction in the hospital, recovering from this painful injury, 5,000 gallons of water dumped into our home.
Mm.
My kids called, and I'm trying to keep Steve from knowing about all of this, but of course that just was my breaking point, and I started crying. And Steve pulled me into bed with him while he's laying there recovering from this hip surgery. He pulls me into his bed next to him and just let me cry on his shoulder. You know, it's so weird because that is one of my sweetest romantic moments that I have with my husband.
Mm.
Was in the midst of this horrendous trial, he just drew me to himself and hugged me and said, it's going to be okay, as he's in the most excruciating pain he's ever been in his life. While Steve was in the hospital, while he was going through his recovery, while our house was being flooded, at the same time, the church office got robbed, Steve's laptop got stolen, which had all of his ministry sermon notes that were not backed up. There was a bunch of stuff going on all of that season. I had read a book that talked about fighting for joy. I had just finished reading the book. I didn't know why I was reading the book. I just read it. But the Lord knew what was on my horizon. All through these things that were happening, that scripture from Nehemiah 8:10 kept washing over my mind. The joy of the Lord is your strength. The joy of the Lord is your strength. Fight for joy. Fight for joy. Steve and I were in the hospital laughing out loud. The nurses were coming in. And we don't usually tell people he's a pastor right away because they treat you differently. Or they think if you tell them about Jesus, they think you're paid to do it. So they don't understand the value of what you're sharing with them.
Oh, interesting.
And as these nurses began to come in, we were able to share with them our story, our joy in the Lord, our testimony, and have an opportunity to share with them why we had hope of a relationship with Jesus Christ. When Steve came home, there was a man who had been visiting our church, wanted to come up and visit Steve. He was not a believer. Steve ended up leading this man to Christ. 3 months later, Steve and I went back to church. We had to take that much time off. And that man came up to me and gave me a card. And in the card was one of those little wooden stone chiseled in it, the scripture, "The joy of the Lord is your strength," Nehemiah 8:10. I had told no one that that scripture was what the Spirit was using to get me through that time. And I love that story. It was an evidence that God sees and God hears. And he used a brand new believer to give me this little chiseled note, "The joy of the Lord is your strength." I love that memory.
Rhonda, that sounds like a God wink to me.
Mm-hmm.
Final chapter, chapter 10, Hope to Be Happy. You share the story of Jim and Elizabeth George's romance and marriage. What was their secret?
It's interesting because Jim and Elizabeth George had a tumultuous marriage at first. Early on, they weren't believers. This is the woman who wrote A Woman After God's Own Heart, A Wife After God's Own Heart. As they were struggling, they had to figure out how they were going to fill their marriage with hope and with fun. She said that they decided to pencil in the word fun into their day planner. And as they just decided to enjoy one another, they began to enjoy their marriage. I love knowing how they decided to fill their life with fun, because it's so easy to get so wrapped up in all the stuff we need to do that we don't decide to enjoy our spouse. One of the quotes says, "Some of the best marriages are enjoyed by couples who make time and effort to playfully delight in one another."
What happened when your father came in from the garage and said to your mother, "Hey, I need to run to the store to buy a ladder. Want to come?" How did she respond?
My parents were teenagers when they got married, and they weren't believers. They were young, and they did not have good examples. But I remember my dad came in, and he wanted to go buy a ladder and asked my mom to come. And she said, "Why would I want to do that?" And I saw it deflate my dad.
Why would I want to buy a ladder?
Yeah.
She didn't see the adventure of just being with him.
Exactly. When you're dating, you'll go anywhere with them. And when Steve and I, remember, we were flipping houses and we were remodeling a house, and he would ask me to go to Home Depot in the middle of the night with him. And we had actually moved to Austin, Texas for 6 years. We planted a church in Lakeway, and we were living in a house that we were remodeling, and my daughter was old enough she could babysit the younger kids. And there was a Home Depot in Austin that was open 24 hours. So we would put everybody to bed, and Steve would say, "You want to come?" And I'd be like, "Yeah." And we would go to Home Depot. Here's the cool thing about Home Depot. At midnight, they play all the old 70s music that he and I listened to when we were dating. And so we're walking up and down the aisles, and at midnight, they dim the lights, and then they light them back up. I guess it's like day over, new day. I remember
romantic ambiance at Home Depot.
Exactly. They dimmed the lights, and one of the songs that he and I had dated to came on, and he grabbed me, and we were dancing in the ladder aisle at Home Depot. It was so romantic. We just have to remember to find ways to enjoy each other and to choose those moments of just making romance and making fun, even in the midst of the busyness of our lives.
You boldly declare that one of the most dynamic evangelistic resources you have at your disposal is a happy marriage that reflects the joy of the Lord. This isn't just a theory. People often ask you and your husband, "What's the secret to a happy marriage?" What do you tell them?
Well, that is exactly right. People long for happily ever after. Everyone wants to have a marriage like the one they had dreamed of. And everyone is two sinful people moving into a relationship, realizing the other spouse is not perfect. And when you fall in love with your spouse, when you love them the way God asks us to, it's the example of Christ's love for the church. When you love like that, it gives you opportunity to tell people. I tell people all the time, I would have destroyed my marriage. I would have expected my husband to give me my worth and my value by loving me in a way that made me feel valued. And when he didn't, I would have resented him. But because of Christ in us, the hope of glory, because of his love in us, our marriage is one that has grown deeper over the years. And you can have that too. And we get to share that not only with the world outside, but with our children in our homes. In 18 years of youth ministry, the number one thing that we saw drive Christian kids away from Christ was hypocrisy in their Christian homes. When their parents pretended to have a marriage that was deeply in love or bickered behind closed doors but smiled at church on Sunday morning, when our love is genuine for each other, then we earn the right to tell our children why having a relationship with Jesus makes a difference in our lives.
Elizabeth George, the Christian author, advises wives to pray three times a day for their husband. Three times. How do you believe that helps?
Prayer changes things. When we decide that I can't do this on my own, when we decide that I want my husband to love me more, then we ask, I pray for Steve over the years, Lord, cause my husband's heart to love me. Cause my husband to forgive me when I let him down. Lord, keep his eyes only for me. Lord, grow my love for my spouse. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous one accomplishes much. Think of Moses on the mountaintop interceding for Joshua as he fought the battle. If we are interceding for our spouse three times a day, imagine what power is unleashed in their lives to become the man that God's calling them to be, to set up protection over your spouse from that woman that would seduce him at the office, from those things that would draw him away from loving you deeply. Praying is powerful. Let it begin with you.
Two last questions for Rhonda Stoppie, my guest, author of The Marriage Mentor. You urge couples to make a bucket list of things, large and small, that they'd like to do before they kick the bucket, and then do some of them. Why is that important?
Having fun things that you want to do together, not just accomplishing tasks, not just financial investments so that we can live our life better out there, enjoying each other now and then focusing on things for the future that you're going to do together. Steve and I always wanted to go on a cruise to Alaska. We couldn't afford it. He was a pastor. We were on a tight budget. It wasn't until our kids were grown and not paying for college. Our kids went to the Master's University and Cal Baptist University and A&M University. And university money is university money. But having those goals out there, when we get time, we're going to go do these things. And I remember the first time we went on an Alaska cruise, we were just living the dream and so excited that we could check that off of our bucket list, having those goals for fun things to do together.
And what would be an example of something small that's not expensive on the bucket list that the couple could enjoy together? I mean, something that you've done together with Steve, for example.
When your kids are little, and you're just wanting to have a conversation with each other, you're just wanting to enjoy each other, sometimes that means you can't even afford to go rent a hotel room and go away. But what we used to do is find a friend that you could swap kids with. And it's like, I'm going to give you my kids for this weekend, and we're going to have our house to ourselves. We're going to stay in bed all day and watch movies. We're going to do something fun that just is just the two of us, even in our own home. We're going to go out to dinner. We're going to make steaks for each other at home. Just having those goals that you are reasonable that you can accomplish now and not way out in the future.
Final question. For the person who's right now contemplating divorce, what would you say to them, Rhonda?
Don't do it. Don't do it. There are so many people who have divorced that have moved on that look back and they'll say, I wish I would not have divorced my spouse. The Bible says, remember the wife of your youth that you may produce a godly seed. Our country is in trouble. And the number one reason is 60% of families don't have a father in the home. When you leave your family, you are not protecting them from Satan, from the onslaught of the enemy that wants to kill, steal, and destroy your children. And when you think the life that you can have is going to be happier outside of your home, away from that marriage that let you down, it's a lie from the enemy, and he wants to destroy you. He wants to destroy your children, your testimony, your church. Don't buy the lie. You won't be happier because you will be walking in rebellion to God's call to remember the spouse of your youth. Get help. Seek out a biblical counselor. You can go online, ACBC, and find, you can even do counseling virtually now.
And for those who are not familiar with that acronym, ACBC stands for Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, and their website is biblicalcounseling.com. biblicalcounseling.com. That's biblicalcounseling.com. Click on the tab at the top that says Find a Counselor. You can select to meet them in person or by video call. You can even select female or male, depending on what you prefer.
Find help to help you fall in love again with your spouse. It's worth the battle. It's worth finding a way back to falling in love.
One of the things you say the divorced have told you, in addition to what you've already mentioned, was, I was blinded by my belief that I was entitled to be treated in a way that made me feel good about myself. I'm dealing with the same problems in my next marriage and now realize the issues I struggled with in marriage number one might have been resolved with maturity and good counselors. I just didn't give it a chance, and I deeply regret that divorce has brought pain and havoc upon my children.
Yes, that is a resounding sentiment among people that my husband visits with. Oftentimes it's the man. There are women who think, I would rather be a single mom and not have to deal with my husband. You know, I do all the housework anyway. I take care of everything anyway. Who cares? And they resent him. And when he leaves, they realize the pain it has brought to their children. They realize once they marry someone else, the same issues, because we're marrying people that are not perfect. And our expectations are never going to be met in another human. And they learn and they mature and they look back and they realize their immaturity was what caused them to believe they could be happier somewhere with someone else.
My guest has been Rhonda Stoppe. She's the co-author with her husband, Steve, of the book, The Marriage Mentor, Becoming the Couple You Long to Be. If they visit your website, noregretswoman.com, and sign up for your newsletter, you're offering a free audio resource. Is that right?
A free audiobook entitled A Christian Woman's Guide to Great Sex in Marriage.
Terrific. Thank you so much for joining us over these last 2 days. It's been eye-opening and I hope very encouraging to husbands and wives alike.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Would love to hear from you at my email, adam@theworldview.com. That's adam@theworldview.com. Is there a specific story or life application point or scripture that was encouraging to you in your life? I'd love to hear about it. I'm Adam McManus, in for Kevin Swanson, as we lay down a vision for the next generation.